America's Heroes Group Roundtable outside the city with Brian Kloss. September is National Suicide Prevention Awareness and National Hispanic Heritage Month. Saturday, today, September 26, 2020. I'm the host, Cliff Kelly, co-host with Colonel Dr. Damon Arnold, executive producer, Glenda Smith, digital media producer, Manning Corazari, assistant digital media producer, Khalifa F., and Saturday topics, panelist, Brian Kloss, neutral arbiter, mediator, attorney at Kloss ADR, Inc., located in Park Ridge, Illinois, and America's Heroes Group Advisory Board member, Monica Ireland Karras, Veterans Benefit Attorney with Tabak Law based on out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, discussing filling VA disability benefits and appealing VA denial. Brian, tell us what we need to know.
Good, Cliff.
Hey,
good afternoon, Colonel Arnold. How are you gentlemen this afternoon?
Fine. How are you doing?
Could not be better. It's a pleasure to be back with Monica Karras. Last month's session was an interesting one, generated a lot of questions. And during today's session, there's two things we were going to try and talk about. You mentioned, Cliff, that this month is Suicide Awareness Month, and one of the things we want to talk about is things that people can put people right over the edge, and that's when you get a letter from the VA notifying you that you're going to get a reduction in your benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about that, but first I'd like to have Monica perhaps talk a bit about just the appeals process and what to do when you get that letter from the VA after you filed your opinion and waited God knows how long, and what to do through that whole appellate process. So hopefully Monica dialed in and she's here.
I am here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Monica.
Hello. Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about what happens when the VA denies your claim. First off, we're talking about claims usually that are filed after February 19th, 2019, and those are part of the Appeals Modernization Act. So those have a different life cycle than those old legacy appeals that were filed prior to that date. And if you filed prior to that date, I'd be very hard-pressed to think you were just getting a decision now. So most of these we'd be talking about are part of the AMA, or the Appeals Modernization Act. When you get that letter from the VA saying that you have been denied, there are three ways for you to appeal that. You either file what's known as a supplemental claim review, you file a higher-level review, or you ask for your review in front of the board. Typically, the first route that we would go is to file what's known as that supplemental review. You want to make sure that when you file after a decision has been received from VA, you must file within a year in order to preserve your effective date. If that 1 year lapses, you will have to start from the beginning and file all over again. And then your effective date, which is the date that your benefits become effective, which you typically receive a back payment from, will be reset to the date that you file. So it's very important that you file within a year. You typically file a supplemental review, and what that is you have the time to put in with that review new medical record evidence, new service treatment records if they weren't on file before, personnel, your OMPF, things like that. VA has a duty to assist you, and they should have already tried to work up your claim and find those records for you, but that doesn't always happen. And we can see sometimes that either service treatment records just weren't put in the veteran file, or they weren't looked for, or you would be amazed at how many sets of service treatment records are lost altogether. We have some individuals that have no exit exam, or we have individuals that we know went to sick call for something and there is absolutely no record of it, and then we have to work that claim up further. So that supplemental review is your chance to put in new evidence and ask the VA to look at the evidence that you're putting in. Should you decide to go do a higher level review, that is a review that is no new evidence, and you're just saying the veteran, the DRO, the decision review officer that looked at your claim, decided incorrectly, and you are disputing that based on what's already in the record. So, and then you can always file with the board. I, as an advocate, as an attorney, I don't typically file immediately with the board to review. 99% of the time, when people file a claim on their own for the first time, there is more medical record evidence that can go in to support the claim. There are things that are known as lay statements and buddy statements that can go in to support your claim. And those are things that either you write up. They're very similar to an affidavit in legal world. It's just a form you fill out. It's typically VA form 4138, and you just put your statement in there. And if you have someone, say you were married at the time of service and your spouse has letters from you being overseas that you were complaining that you hurt your knee and the VA says there's no record of that, those letters can be evidence. You can have your spouse write a letter saying, yes, he went into the service, fine. He came home with a gait issue that he's walking funny, and I can tell you that from point A to point B, it was different. So there's lots of evidence that you can go put in to support your record. So most of the time, if you do, in fact, get a denial from the VA, we do file that 210995, which is a supplemental review.
All right. You folks do a lot of work, that's for sure.
We do, yeah. And we're very successful for our veterans. We have learned how to navigate a system that, you know, sometimes, the magic key is getting an outside doctor to dispute what the VA is claiming. Oftentimes, part of that duty to assist that the VA has in helping you develop your claim is a comp and pen exam, and they send you to a doctor either within the VA or with one of their contractors, and they decide whether your injury is least as likely as not connected to your time in service. And oftentimes we can find problems with those exams, and you could have another doctor give another opinion and, perhaps win your claim that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Monica, one of the things physicians worry about when giving opinions is that they're going to get subpoenaed or have to sit into some deposition with some cranky attorney like you or me asking them questions and questioning their conclusions. Can you explain for the listeners, if they need an opinion and they want to go to their physician, the comforting words that they can give to their physician that will greatly increase that physician's cooperation?
Well, first, I object to being called a cranky counselor. I believe that applies to you. I am always lovely and pleasant.
You hear that, sir?
Yeah, I heard that. She's a basket of kittens. You
know? Always. So the VA is what is considered a non-adversarial process. So what that means is it's supposed to be different than regular old litigation. This is not a personal injury suit. I am not going to depose your doctor. They're not going to send me a bill for thousands of dollars for sitting through depositions and reviewing your medical records and having to show up in court. If at the VA level, before going into the judiciary, so as long as I'm in administrative courts, the VA, the Board of Veterans Appeals, It's just me dealing with the VA. I don't have an opposing counsel when I go to the board. It's myself, my client, and a judge, because this process is supposed to be non-adversarial. We're supposed to be trying to work in the veteran's best interest. That is what VA's duty and job is. So if your physician is going to give me a written statement that they believe that your issue is service-connected, I just need a report from them. And the report needs to hammer on a couple of very specific points. They need to have reviewed your entire file. They need to have had access to your service treatment records, your personnel file, everything that a comp and pen examiner would have examined. Your doctor that's giving this opinion would also have to examine. That being said, once I get the review from your medical doctor and it is either yay or nay that they're going to agree with you, that's it. They give me the record. They probably will never hear from me personally, and that is submitted as evidence. And without getting too much into the legal realm of things, it's not like what you see on TV. I don't have to lay a foundation and say to my judge and have someone on, you know, the stand and say, is this your report? Do you swear under oath? That is not the way this court works, because it is non-adversarial. So because it is non-adversarial, I just hand that report over to the court, whether it's the board or, you know, if I'm dealing with a decision review officer, if it's still in front of the VA, and that's it. Your doctor is not ever swearing under oath. They're not, you know, they're just talking about their medical ability and what they are able to opine to based on their medical background and ability.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
Yeah. Your physician will never be called for a deposition or anything, Monica, is what you're saying?
Unless under some very odd, strange set of circumstances that we take you up to the Court of Appeals and there was a full hearing, briefing, you know, everything like a normal court. But even at that, the Court of Appeals is often different than normal litigation. So there's a very small chance that doctor would ever be needed for such a thing.
So a vet who needs an opinion letter from their doctor could say, you're not going to get called as a witness.
Oh, right, right. Like there's 0.01% chance that I would need.
I think we're hearing the cautious lawyer saying, well, you know, you could get struck by lightning, so.
That is exactly what you're hearing, but don't quote me on it.
Okay. Well, unfortunately for you, Cliff has lots of listeners, so
that's funny.
Cliff, one of the things that I saw a lot of at the legal clinic is, and anecdotal evidence suggests that the VA sends in a lot more of these letters out, is a letter notifying a veteran that the VA is going to reduce their benefits and they have a certain amount of time to act, or their benefits are going to get automatically reduced. And you know, that's never a letter you want to get.
No.
So Monica, if you could talk about that, that would be terrific.
Sure would.
You know, that's a really interesting point right now, because I am seeing those more often than not. I shouldn't say more often than I ever have before. I'm seeing lots of those proposed reductions from the VA. I heard that there are all sorts of teams within the VA that are actually just dedicated to specifically reviewing people's records and seeing if reductions are warranted. So it's my understanding that there are people within the VA that is their job, to review these people's benefits and make sure they are warranted. What happens is they send you a letter and they say, hey, we have a proposed reduction, and that reduction is going to happen on so-and-so date. You have 60 days to dispute this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people panic. Mm-hmm. I, for the first time in my career, saw a proposed reduction recently that was for a gentleman that is currently 90% service-connected, and they want to reduce him to zero. So they want to take all of his benefits away from him right now. And that particular case, they say that the comp and pen exams were faulty. So cut to the chase. You need to object to that immediately. You send a letter in or you send a form 4138 saying, I do not agree with this. I am demanding that we have an in-person hearing or, you know, in days of COVID, a telephonic hearing that I am able to dispute this. And you at least put it on the radar that you don't agree. Because if you don't say that you don't agree, when that time period expires, which is typically 60 days, they typically give you 60 days to respond, and then there's a date shortly thereafter that they're going to reduce your benefits. The other caveat to this is that if they decide to reduce your benefit and say, now, I don't want to get too much into VA math, but it's a very interesting thing. You can be 80% service-connected. They can be taking away 10%, but it doesn't actually affect your overall rating. And I'm not going to get too much into how that adds up. But if you're a veteran in that situation, you know what I'm talking about when I say VA math. If they have decided that they're going to reduce you and it does not affect your monthly compensation, they will reduce you immediately. So they will pull that from you immediately if it does not affect your how much you're getting on a monthly basis. So the bottom line is you must object immediately. And then you have to look inside that decision they gave you, and you have to find out why. Mm-hmm. Why is it they're reducing you? And there are all sorts of rules within the VA that sometimes they're not allowed to reduce you. So it has to be looked at very carefully. If you're a permanent and total veteran, they shouldn't be messing with that. Mm-hmm. If you're a veteran who has a certain service connection, say we're talking about a Vietnam era veteran who's had this, you know, particular disability for 20 years, they shouldn't be messing with that. That is something that should not be reviewed. So it's there's a lot of rules. I would highly recommend that if you have a proposed reduction, you talk to an attorney or a veteran service officer because it is very complicated, and it can turn your life upside down.
That is very interesting. Well, how often does that happen? Do you have any idea?
More often than I would like to see right now.
Is that right?
Earlier in my practice, you know, I saw that once a year. I'm seeing it three times a month right now.
Woo!
It's very active all of a sudden that they're reviewing, and I'm not sure why. I'm not sure what is going on within the VA that's happening, but I am certainly seeing a lot more of those. And like I said, that for the first time, I'm seeing someone that has a pretty high service connection, and they want to take his benefit away completely.
Well, that's a big change.
And it's
Monica,
very unfortunate.
You mentioned one of our earlier conversations that there's, I think it was Seattle and Florida you were talking about, where the they have new employees or new ratings officers or something, and they're making mistakes.
So when they changed this, when President Trump decided we were doing the Appeals Modernization Act and we were going to try and speed up the way that these claims were processed, they hired a lot of new employees, and those employees, they're mostly decision review officers, and to my knowledge, they are based in Florida and in Seattle. I could be wrong. There could be more, but that's what I'm aware of. And, you know, to the credit of the current administration, they are trying to make things go faster because there are so many frustrated veterans. But when you put an influx of so many new employees in at once, and then you throw a pandemic into it, you know, we're not always getting the best quality decisions out of our review officers. Sure. I can say, you know, I do higher level review conferences on the phone with review officers, and there are some out there that are brilliant and on their game, and they know exactly what, and most of them are veterans themselves. But we have ran into issues where I had a decision the other day that it was clear that the rationale was, it couldn't be.
Couldn't be, yeah.
It didn't make sense.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I am seeing things like that right now. I can say I never want to come off as bashing the VA, because the VA truly does want to uphold the benefits that our service members have. You know, they've earned these. But unfortunately, we have some rules in place that just sometimes make the process hard.
Well, we will certainly continue to see what's going on with that. That's quite an issue. And I'm just glad there's someone like you there that can really look up and see what is deserving of these veterans and what isn't, because that's extremely important. So, you know, that's
great. It is so important.
Yeah.
And, you know, as the world turns and as the world changes, we have different issues in front of the VA. We're seeing military sexual trauma like we've never seen before. We've obviously, you know, in the past 20 years or so, finally come to terms with what PTSD is and what mental health issues are. So these are all things that are new to the VA having to deal with. You know, and to their benefit, they've tried to acclimate and get on board. But there is certainly misinformation out there about how to file and what to file, and certainly the process is difficult.
Well, I just think it's great that there's someone like you that is helping out, because I'm sure a lot of these veterans, if they didn't have someone like you, they'd have a major problem.
Well, Cliff, let me tell you, my father is a Vietnam veteran,
and
he has been through it all. He's been through Agent Orange exposure. He's been through some mental health issues, which we're still dealing with to this day. And we also have bad water exposure at Camp Lejeune, where he was stationed. So it is very personal to me, and I understand the frustration that comes. It took my father 28 years to get a service connection.
Oh, my goodness. Is that the blue water thing?
No, he was the Camp Lejeune Bad Water Act. That is all of the anyone who was stationed at Camp Lejeune until, I believe, it was 1983 or 1985 was the cutoff. And if you were stationed there for more than 30 days and you were exposed to the water, which everybody was if you lived there, there's numerous conditions that follow from that. And, you know, Camp Lejeune is a very interesting subject because
it really
couldn't service connect these veterans at first, right? Because they weren't doing anything. They were just living there. So it took President Obama and an act to get some, you know, clarification on what these veterans are.
Listen, you are simply wonderful. We're out of time. And thank you so much for giving us all this great information. Appreciate
it. It has been my pleasure, and it's always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian, outside of the city. Regarding any information and resources that's needed about affordable housing, social services, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Wacker Drive, Suite 4250. Thank you, as always, for watching us live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the Facebook like button at the top of your Facebook page. Therefore, you will stay connected and will receive future notifications regarding shows, events, information, and resources regarding our veterans, armed forces, and family members. We're always grateful to our partner, Mrs. Dorothy Lavelle of the Chicago Crusaders, and our article that can be read every week on veterans, armed forces, and family members' voices. www.chicagocrusaders.com to subscribe to the weekly column with the one and only, the Governor of Talk Radio, Mr. Cliff Kelly, and America's Heroes Group Voices. America's Heroes Group, please call Chicago Crusaders to subscribe to our weekly column, 773-752-2500. For the callers that were trying to call Veteran Business Project, please try that number again. It is 833-883-8249. Once again, please try to call Veteran Business Project once again, 833-883-8249. Thank you to our technical producer, Delvin Randall, for doing a fabulous job. To our global listening audience, thank you so much. To all our partners, the sponsors, thank you guys for making us who we are.